Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBA Outlet Preview Series presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always on all these preview pods, Corey Waldron and special international OTG guest, Jack Manuel. What's up, guys?
Hi, bye.
Hey, Nick. Hey, Jack. It's a pleasure to have another person on the OTG podcast as we break down these 30 NBA teams.
Great to be here, guys.
Pumped to have you on, Jack. Corey, as always, great talking with you. But on team number 29, first team of our series was 30, my Brooklyn Nets, sadly, but 29, Atlanta Hawks. We'll talk about what we think of this ranking in a second, but what do we think about the Hawks last season?
Last season was basically synonymous with what we know about the Atlanta Hawks. They achieved well, 43-39 record, fifth in the East, ended up losing in six games to the Wizards in what was a somewhat underwhelming series. I mean, we knew what was going to happen with the Wizards. Were much more talented on paper, and it was probably one of the more forgettable playoff series that of 2017. I don't know about you guys, but I barely watched any of it.
Yeah, no, I don't think I watched much of them at all in general last season. There's a few times I chipped, I tuned in. But, the Hawks were it was a roller coaster. I remember they started off the season pretty hot. Then they lost like 14 games or 12 games in a row, and they fell down the Eastern Conference. And then there was all the talks, are they going to blow it up and trade Millsap? It was a roller coaster, and at times it looked like they weren't even a playoff team, and then they looked like a playoff team. They ended up finishing right in the middle of the pack, which just shows, the type of talent that's in the East when a team can be up and down like the Hawks and still end up getting a 5 seed. But
yeah, it's crazy.
It was bumpy.
Crazy that they had 43 wins and got the 5th seed. And like you mentioned, I think there was one point in the season where they almost lost like 10 straight games. So yeah. They had stretches where they were terrible. They lost to our Nets, Jack. We saw them play them at the end of the season. They did not look like a playoff team. And, one thing for the Hawks, it was kind of funny because the rest of the league was doing so well offensively. They struggled on the offensive end. They were 27th in offensive rating, but they played good D. So they're 4th in defensive rating. That's why some people were like, maybe in the playoffs they'll do a little better. I mean, I remember watching that series and I was like, wow, why didn't Washington finish them sooner? I expected that series to be over in 5. I was pretty impressed, though, with what they did in the playoffs. They played probably better in the playoffs than they did at the end of the season, especially Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, I think building around Schroeder is definitely what the front office is trying to do now. And we were chatting about it before we started recording that it signals where their future is going. And on that Nets game that you were talking about, Nick, doing a bit of research, it was on March 26th, and this Atlanta Hawks blog was actually saying that it was their biggest disappointment of the season. It was their 7th loss in a row. So, I mean, it was a good moment for us. It was one of the 20 wins that we got to see. So.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just crazy for the Hawks to be that type of team. And then not to mention 2 years ago, this is a team that won 60 games. A very good team. And next thing you know, they're all over the place. They added Dwight Howard last year. It didn't really work out. They traded away Jeff Teague in the offseason, went with Schroeder. And this year with the moves that they made, we'll talk about a little bit. It looks like they have a lot of confidence in Schroeder. He struggled at times during the season, but like we mentioned in the postseason, he did have a solid stretch. What would be your highlight of the Hawks season?
Definitely that 4-0 Knicks game. That was wild.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Where I think Millsap played like 60 minutes, Schroeder had like 15 assists. It was one of the few highlights in what is generally a pretty underwhelming season, as we seem to have come to the consensus of. But anytime a game goes past 2-0, it's going to be like talked about in the Twitter sphere and stuff. And I remember 60 minutes in an NBA game, like, I think it's 13 players since like 1983 that have done that. And like Paul Millsap, he's getting on. Like he's like 32 or something now, isn't he? So to play 60 minutes for him is saying something.
It's impressive.
He was balling out that game. I mean, it was funny. I think I only watched like 2 Hawk games all season. And it was the one you just mentioned. And then the other one for me was when they played the Rockets. It was Dwight Howard's first game back in Houston after being traded away. And it's when Hardaway Jr. scored like 23 points in the 4th quarter of his 33, and he like outscored the Rockets single-handedly in the game.
Yeah, it was
back
a big comeback,
down.
Right?
Yeah, they were down by 20, and that's probably the highlight for me because Hardaway Jr. for the most part, Ken Bazemore for me was pretty underwhelming, and Hardaway Jr. was he was a bright spot next to Schroeder and Millsap.
Yeah, I think for me, for the bright spot, I think Taurean Prince, you know, he didn't get a ton of minutes early in the year, but then towards the end of the season, he started. He played some great defense for a rookie. I think he had some type of, you know, record or accomplishment in the playoffs where he scored over 10 points in his first five playoff games as a rookie. Nobody's done that since, you know, XXX. I don't remember the exact date, but, you know, I thought he's a good player to have, and he kind of fits the mold of what they're looking for. Somebody, they lost Amari Carroll, you know, 2 years ago. They bring him in. He's a guy that he can improve his offensive game. He's going to get a lot of minutes this year, and he already showed he can play some defense.
Yeah, they replaced him with a lookalike. Amari Carroll. Like, it's pretty much like a great value to Amari Carroll.
Yeah. And I mean, Damari Carroll, we've got him now, Nick. So, I mean,
Yeah.
it also works out well in the NBA, in the NBA universe.
But talking about Hawks, let's talk disappointments. You know, what was the biggest disappointment of the last season for the Hawks?
I think I just mentioned a disappointment for the Hawks in general was they weren't able to string together from January 13 to March 6. They never notched more than a two-game winning streak, which I think was one of the worst in the league. So they certainly weren't going into the playoffs with any real momentum, as we've sort of been saying. So, and that loss to the Nets on March 26, their seventh straight, was, as we mentioned, just the icing on a very terrible cake, so to speak.
Yeah, for me, I'm going a player wise. For me, it was Kent Bazemore. You know, he
Good
just
pick.
inked a 4-year, $70 million deal in 2016, and then last year, you know, he averaged 0.6 points less per game, so only 11 points. His field goal percentage shot dropped, and he just, you know, when you get that money, obviously we saw a ton of huge contracts go out in 2016 between Mozgov, as we mentioned last podcast, and you know Bazemore. For all that money, you didn't get much for Bazemore in return. And that, you know, just going forward too, now that the Hawks are now locked into this contract and Bazemore doesn't look like he's going to be then, you know, a role player at best.
Yeah, that one hurt. That one hurt, and it kind of saved a lot of other teams in the NBA because of, you know, a lot of teams were interested in Bazemore, and he had a good postseason. He looked like, you know, he was improving. He added that 3-point shot. He was an athletic guy. He played some defense, but last season, like you said, inconsistent. He didn't really improve to the level they wanted to see, and now they're just hoping that, you know, maybe he can bounce back this season. But he was disappointment. Also, big disappointment that was Dwight Howard. I mean, maybe I'm not a huge disappointment for everybody, but a lot of the Hawks people expect him to come in and do a better job than he did. But by the end of the season, he was just so banged up and he just didn't have the energy level and, you know, that extra pop that we're used to seeing from Dwight Howard to really contribute offensively to the game. He still protected the rim a little bit, but he was slow and he just wasn't the type of player that, you know, Atlanta wanted to see after losing Al Horford.
It's really a shame because Dwight Howard hasn't been able to live up to expectations for like the last 5 years. And like, it's not even that he's a bad player anymore because, you know, he's solid, but like he refuses to play like pick and roll type of offense, which
He needs
kind
to
of
just
hurts.
understand that he's in a smaller role and he's just not as good as he was. And he could just be that like supercharged, you know, center that does all the dirty work and he could really help your team. But like you said, he just doesn't really want to understand that.
It's a stubbornness. You know, you've been to an NBA finals. You were, you know, I don't think he won MVP, but he was obviously in the conversation. He hit this plateau with the Magic, and just ever since he's been on the, you know, it's maybe not a steep decline, but it's been a short decline.
I mean, it's been a pretty good decline, though, comparing to what, like you mentioned, he was in Orlando. He carried that team to the finals. Next thing in, you know, LA, he's just a huge disappointment. They hate him there. He goes to Houston. He doesn't get along with James Harden. You know, he blows that opportunity. And then last year with Atlanta, you know, I think that's his hometown. They wanted him to succeed, and he just couldn't do it. But enough about Dwight. Let's talk about this ranking. Number 29 for the Hawks, you know. Like I mentioned on the previous pod, our writers come up with these rankings. This is over 20 guys and girls putting in their submissions, and we average them all together and come up with this. And the Nets were number 30, and the Hawks are number 29. What are your guys' thoughts on this ranking?
I thought when I heard that, I'm like, I think the Nets have. It's odd to say that the Nets have more talent than someone going into a season, but I think the Nets have more talent than the Atlanta Hawks. I'm not sure what you guys think.
We
No,
did. We
you're
said
100% right. Yeah.
like
yesterday
they're
we had the Nets above them for sure. Just because the
yeah
Hawks losing Paul Millsap, which we'll talk about a little bit later, is just going to be such a huge loss.
There's no depth anymore. Like there wasn't any depth really to begin with. Like, and they lost as much as that contract that the Knicks gave Tim Hardaway Jr. that I'm sure we'll be speaking about was horrific. He was like Corey, like you said, he was a very important part of that offense, especially when Bazemore wasn't producing.
And I think your issue now is, you know, Schroeder now, he has to be the number one option as well as run the offense. Like, Schroeder this upcoming season has a lot of pressure on his shoulders. On his shoulders, not Schroeder's. But he's got to do a lot this year. Like, it's going to be crazy. Like, I hope he does well. But, you know, there's just not very much around a guy, a young guy at that, who's he's becoming a top point guard in this league. And with little help around him, he's going to be asked to do even more than before.
I think Dennis Schroeder could have a great season. The Hawks will still be bad because, like you said, he has to do so much. When you look at, like, who's probably going to start, you know, it's just not going to be a lot of offensive help for him. They lost guys like Paul Millsap, you know, one of the best power forwards in the league. Like you guys mentioned, Tim Hardaway Jr. Dwight even wasn't – he wasn't great, but he still contributed. You know, even if someone like Thabo Sefolosha, losing him, which we'll talk about later. But, you know, a lot of loss on this team, and the replacements just aren't really that great. So I think 29 was a pretty fair ranking for them. They'll probably be one of the bottom five teams in this league.
I just want to say it's fair, but I want to make it clear. This is the worst team in the NBA. Like, this is – like, we got it wrong. The power rankings are wrong. Like, the Nets are not worse than the Hawks, and we're going to find that out this year.
We shall wait and see.
Moving on from the rankings, like I mentioned, we're going to talk about the additions and departures. Additions, they had a pretty good draft. John Collins at number 20. He had a big summer league. You know, he was all over the place throwing down dunks on everybody. What were your guys' thoughts on him?
I think he's a nice addition. I think in terms of losing Paul Millsap, to replace him with a nice – and he'll probably – he's likely to come off the bench with some good minutes. And he was reading some, like, summer league stuff. He was alongside Lonzo, Kyle Kuzma, Donovan Mitchell, and Tatum. He was one of the stars of the league. He really bought out, like you were saying, Nick. He threw down some dunks. And I think he's going to fit into what Atlanta wants and what their direction is. He'll get plenty of time to show what he's got, I reckon.
Yeah, he's 6'10", he's 20 years old. His college stats, you know, he's a 19 and almost 10 guy. We saw some nasty dunks in summer league from him. And he's very long. Oh, not at all. And he's very athletic, he's long. A guy like John Collins, like, you can tell that if things go right, he can actually develop properly. You know, him and Schroeder could be really fun in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Hawks got to be happy about that pick, especially at 20. I'm at 19. You know, it gives him some good value. And like you said, you know, somebody to fill in for that four spot and for the future. But moving on from him, they drafted Tyler Dorsey in the pick they picked up in the trade. 41st pick. You know, this guy's a shooter. What do you guys expect from him? Second round pick. Spend a lot of time in the G League.
Well, they need shooters, and he's played on the Greek national team as well, so he's got that sort of Euro flavor. So, you know, the Euro guys know how to shoot. I'm sure they'll be, behind Bellinelli. Bellinelli might even be a nice sort of mentor for him, sort of showing him the ropes in the league. Not that, you know, Bellinelli's had an outstanding career, but he's been around the locker room and stuff. So I think
he's done some things.
He's done some things, yeah. I mean, he's part of a Dwight Howard trade somehow. And the headline piece to it, I mean, we'll get to it, but it just bewilders me that he is a headline piece to a Dwight Howard trade. As much as we have been hating on Dwight, Dwight and Bellinelli in the same sentence is like saying LeBron and, you know, Schroeder or something. but yeah, they need shooting. They don't really have – they lost Thabo, who – was a good shooter. Tim Hardaway Jr. was by far their best shooter, so they need, you know, to plug that with a young guy. And I think Dorsey can provide some, you know, maybe some backup minutes if there's some injuries to, say, you know, Bazemore and such. But I don't see him, you know, being a focal point in this offense.
Yeah, you know, he's obviously young. The one good thing is about the shooting. You know, he never shot under 40% in college. So, you know, obviously it's college and the line's a little bit farther back, but you like seeing shooters, especially on the fact that we're looking at this lineup and, you know, there's not a lot of shooters on this team, like you just mentioned, after losing Hardaway. So he'll probably only get, you know, 10, maybe 15 minutes a game. He'll probably see it sometime in the D League, maybe even majority of the time. But, you know, it's never bad to try and, you know, get lucky with one of these late second round picks or second round picks.
The NBA is all about shooting now, so if you can shoot the ball, there's a chance you'll get in the league and, you know, have a big role. But moving on from him, Alpha Kaba, that'll be the 60th pick in the draft by the Hawks. He's a guy who's likely to be a draft and stash.
Yep.
That's probably the best way to put it in general.
Yeah, not much about him. 60th pick, you never know. With these second-round picks, we talked about a little bit on the first pod, you know, they could turn into some good things. But let's talk about that Dwight Howard trade. You know, we'll talk about the additions part of it first. Dwight Howard in the 31st pick for Marshall Plumlee, Miles Plumlee, Marco Bellinelli in the 41st pick.
Wow, just Miles Plumlee for Dwight Howard. How does, like, I get wanting to get rid of Dwight Howard, but literally you get rid of one of your better picks and you get a worse pick in return, and you get two players who were below serviceable for their former teams in the Charlotte Hornets. Makes no sense to me, and I'm sure that they could have got something of better value. I'm wondering whether the market was really that bare for someone of Dwight Howard's ilk.
I want to say, to a degree, it was more that they just wanted to do the right thing by Howard.
Yeah.
I don't even think maybe it was the right thing by Howard, but just the fact that they didn't want to, like, hold him hostage and keep him on, you know, obviously a team that's not going to be very good. But like you said, like, this is not a good team. I mean, this is not a good trade, because Dwight Howard is definitely worth more than a Miles Plumlee, who barely gets any minutes and is at $12 million a year. A Bellinelli who's a little bit older and can just shoot. For the Hornets, it's the absolute steal.
Yeah, pairing him along. Yeah, well, but still, I think pairing him alongside Kemba and with Clifford, who he has a prior relationship with, and in a system where the Hornets, and I mean, the Hornets are sort of like a light version of the Atlanta Hawks were. But I think, you know, new environment and alongside a star. I mean, Schroeder's an okay point guard, but Kemba Walker's, it's odd to say, but he's one of the top point guards in the East, and he's an all-star. So I think he's fit. We all thought that his fit in Atlanta was okay to replace Al Horford. But I think if he gets back to, you know, like you were saying, that pick-and-roll action with Kemba, I think they can develop a nice tandem there. And I think they can probably replace, you know, the largest Hawks in that fifth spot. I mean, but this isn't a Hornets podcast, but that's just my opinion.
I can see why the Hawks wanted to make the trade, in the sense that they just wanted to get rid of Dwight. They didn't want Dwight around these young players, and they just wanted to get rid of him as fast as possible. And I mean, they just wanted to get rid of that contract. I don't know if it was a thing where they should have waited a little bit more for a deal, but maybe they couldn't get one. And I think, yeah, Dwight has a possibility. This is probably his last chance to kind of, you know, bring back his career in Charlotte with the Hornets. But I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't, just because of the way his body's kind of falling apart, you know, and just he doesn't really fit in the new NBA with his lack of ball skills and lack of shooting.
Well, for sure, that's a big deficit.
You do need someone that, and I think as much as we've been crapping on him, he still averages a double-double. And
he still rebounds well. That's
one thing he still does. He's still one of the top five, top ten rebounders in the NBA. And that's going to be important, you know, teams like in Charlotte, where they probably lack that sort of, you know, front court presence. You know, Miles Plumlee for Dwight Howard, you know, it's a steal for the Hornets. One of the steals of free agency, in my opinion.
But you have to look at it from another perspective. If, like, maybe the Hornets, it doesn't work out, and then they have to eat Dwight's contract for another year too, and that just kind of locks up your books. And you have this guy who's immature, from what I've heard, and he's not a great locker room guy. So if he doesn't work out, you know, you've got to remember too, is this a guy that Atlanta just signed last offseason? They were willing to trade their 31st pick and take on Miles Plumlee's contract to get rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, from the Hawks' perspective, there had to be more that we don't know behind the scenes.
What I'm thinking. That's usually the case when you see something like this. Like, just think about it in the perspective of, like, you know, when you just see a player randomly get cut or randomly get traded, or, you know, it's just something you don't expect. And I think that was kind of the thing, that he just didn't work out and they wanted to move on and kind of set that culture straight. But enough about Dwight Howard. This isn't just about him. Moving on to the other trade they made, they received a first-round pick, Jamal Crawford, Diamond Stone, for a second-round pick. And they cut Crawford, they cut Stone, and they ended up with a first for nothing, for just having cap space and able to facilitate a trade. Great trade for the Hawks.
Awesome trade for the Hawks.
You ended up with no extra cap space and you got a draft pick.
Yeah, they just had a buyout Crawford, and they probably weren't going to use that space anyway. So extra first is always good for a rebuilding team. Re-signing-wise, re-sign Mike Muscala, re-sign Ilyasova, two bigs. You know, Muscala, I think they're both on pretty good deals. Ersan Ilyasova is a one-year deal. He'll probably start the season at the four for them. So no problem with these re-signings for what the Hawks are trying to do.
No, I think they're both really nice re-signings. I mean, as much as they're heading in a youth direction, you need some sort of veteran presence, and both of these guys will play decent minutes to support those new rookie additions that we've been talking about. And Ilyasova is quite a capable shooter, and Mike Muscala is sort of that Draymond Green type that can sort of, you know, do everything for you to play a bit of defense, pass a little bit, shoot a little bit, get some rebounds. So yeah, absolutely agree.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, you know, on a good team, they're great role players, and on a rebuilding team, they're great guys for this time period before you become competitive again. And we saw at times last year, you know, Ilyasova bounced around last year, being on three different teams. But, you know, everywhere he went, he shot the ball fairly well from deep. So it's not a bad deal for Ilyasova. And then, you know, Muscala, he's been there for the last couple of years, and you just bring him in to pass the time. It's not a bad deal for the Hawks.
Yeah, he's Muscala's a bench guy that they probably could keep going forward because he shoots the ball well for a big dude. And Ersan Ilyasova, one-year deal, who can't hurt you there. He's somebody who's going to play pretty hard for you and, like you said, shoot the ball. And the Hawks just need bodies to start and at least make the games relatively competitive. You know, they're not going to make, you know, re-signing Ersan Ilyasova is not going to make them win a ton of games, but at least kind of makes them more respectable.
Right. Yeah. And signing Ilyasova, it's only a one-year deal. You know, say Collins pops off this year and has a really good rookie season. You know, Ilyasova, maybe you let him walk next year and then you promote Collins to the starting role, and you don't have to worry about, you know, having to trade a guy, move a guy's big contract.
Exactly. It works out perfect. Then moving on from signings, they signed Dwayne Dedmon, which from the Spurs, which I thought was a pretty solid move. Dedmon, you know, did some nice stuff in San Antonio. Obviously, we always expect to drop off a little bit when anybody leaves the Spurs. But what do you guys expect to see from Dedmon in Atlanta?
Well, I mean, he'll be definitely starting now that Dwight's gone. And I think what he brings is, you know, that sort of anyone who's been at the Spurs, yeah, we're likely to see a drop-off. I think it's unlikely. He's going to have a bigger role. So I think, if anything, Dedmon's rebounding, scoring, and presence within the Atlanta roster, I think, is only going to be a positive. And, yeah, a really nice deal, 2 years, $14 million. I mean, it shows that, you know, where centers are rated in today's NBA, especially if you can't shoot a three. But I think he fits in nicely, sort of like, you know, your Mike Muscala's, your Ilyasova's. He's not going to be your number one guy. That's going to be, you know, Schroeder. They're going to be focusing on Collins, Bazemore to a lesser extent. But I think, you know, when you're building a roster and you can get a Dwayne Dedmon for 2 years at $14 million, yeah, you jump at that.
It also opens the possibility of moving him. Sorry to cut you off, Corey, but, you know, on that two-year deal, you know, this is a veteran-type player. Same thing with Ersan Ilyasova. This is a guy that you could possibly move at the deadline, pick up another asset, because, like Corey mentioned, these guys are good role players. So having that on your roster just as a trade asset, even if you only get a second-round pick or a future first, it's still better than nothing.
Yeah, Dedmon's going to be interesting because I did a little bit of more research on Dedmon than other guys, just because – you know, he's never played more than 17 minutes per game. Like last year with the Spurs was his first like season playing more than 15 minutes per game. And just looking at his like per 36 minute numbers last year, he would have had 10 points per game and 13 rebounds. So you pretty much get the same type of Dwight Howard numbers if he gets starter minutes. And you get him for dirt cheap, and he plays at this point in time probably better defense than Dwight Howard currently.
And better attitude. You know, he's
right.
You know, and like you said, he probably plays better defense. I think he moves a little bit better too. So I love the signing. I kind of wanted the Nets to grab him because I thought he'd be a solid guy, especially on a deal like this, just to have a big that can, you know, actually do things.
Yeah, we certainly lack a front court presence. You know, the Mozgov can only do so much. So, you win some, you lose some.
Exactly. And they also picked up Luke Babbitt. You know, he's a great three-point shooter. He's not really going to do much other than that. He's been around the NBA for quite some time now, so he does have, you know, he's a veteran presence, a solid guy to have in the locker room. Thoughts on him?
Yeah, they need anyone that can shoot right now. Losing their best shooter in Tim Hardaway, as we've mentioned a few times. Babbitt's not going to have a huge role to play, but, you know, if you need a spark plug and some junk time minutes, someone to come off the bench and shoot a tray for you, I think Babbitt's that guy.
Yeah, he's a nice piece to fill, like I keep saying, to fill the passing time. You know, he's a decent shooter. He shot 41% last year from three. You know, he's not a very good rebounder, obviously, but he's, you know, he plays the three or the four. So he's a nice player to have off the bench.
Yeah, for sure. But let's talk departures. This is what really hurt the Hawks. You know, I'm going to go through the list. We'll kind of go through each guy a little bit. Paul Millsap, Dwight Howard, Tim Hardaway Jr., Jose Calderon, Tabo Cephalosha, Chris Humphreys, and not to mention they traded Kyle Korver during the season. So they lost a lot of big pieces, especially guys that, you know, you think Atlanta Hawks, like Paul Millsap, he's one of those guys. They lost him, and, you know, that I think is going to have a huge impact on the Hawks this season. You're going to realize how great a player Paul Millsap really is by the impact that he had on the Hawks last season to just make them that fifth seed in the East.
I agree, but I also agree with the fact that they let him go. Because...
Well, yeah, that makes sense to let him go. It's just think that he's going to be a huge loss in the that what he brings to the table.
Absolutely. He's your jack-of-all-trades guy, but to the max extent. He's a, you know, perennial all-star in the East. I'm not sure he'll be that when he heads to the West with Denver. But he was the focal point of this Atlanta team last year, you know, playing 60 minutes in that 4-OT game. He was what the Atlanta Hawks have been for the past 5-10 years in that Budenholzer system. When they're all four players, one player of the week, Kyle Korver, Al Horford, Jeff Teague, and Paul Millsap. Paul Millsap, I think out of those four, is probably the best player, and they've lost their best player. Any team that loses the best player off their roster is certainly going to struggle, but, you know, Dennis Schroeder is going to have to step up. Whether he can remains to be seen.
You know, it's crazy that, 2014-2015 season, that the Atlanta Hawks were the one seed in the East, you know, 60-win team, and that entire starting five is no longer together, and that was, you know, 3 years ago. It's definitely been a change of events in Atlanta. And losing Millsap obviously is going to be the biggest loss. And also just for the fact that, you know, Millsap has been there now for a while. He was obviously their best player on that 2014-2015 Atlanta team. They lose him. They get rid of Howard. You know, he traded Korver in the middle of the season. It's probably hard for Hawks fans when you see all these guys that you probably got attached to and you saw winning basketball games go away. But this is how you rebuild. You know, they weren't going to beat LeBron. You know, we saw this, you know, 2 years in a row of the playoffs, LeBron steamrolled them. Last year, they couldn't get past the Wizards. You know, it was obviously time for a change. So, you know, letting these guys walk, you know, Millsap was 32. Were you really going to lock up, you know, max money in a 32-year-old player? Wouldn't have been smart, even if you wanted to keep him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it definitely made sense to move on. It's just, you know, I think, like you said, the Hawks fans, it's going to really hurt too, because it's a guy that came from Utah. He wasn't necessarily a well-known guy in Utah. He comes here, expands his game, becomes an all-star, and he's kind of like their guy. You know, and he, like you guys mentioned, he was their best player because offensively and defensively, he has a huge impact on the game, and he can do so many different things. And he was a big reason why the Hawks were, you know, I think fourth in defensive rating last year. And the year before, he was in contention for defensive player of the year. So Paul Millsap is definitely one of those players that's, you know, hard to replace if you lose him, if you're a good team. But when you already lost a ton of guys, it's extremely difficult. But one more thing on Millsap, you guys think that the Hawks probably should have traded him at the deadline?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of sucks to see him only not even get the max deal that he was looking for. And he gets a three-year, $93 million deal, if I'm not mistaken. If the Hawks had have known that they could have got him for that, you know, it's debatable whether you let him go, because the Denver have got him. I think that third year might even not be a player option as well. So, like, they've got him to wait.
Team option.
Team option. So, it's hard for Hawks fans to see that, like Corey was saying. But at the end of the day, I think Travis Schlenk, the GM, is about blowing. He's blowing it up, and he's going full on youth with adding some pieces around that. And I think ultimately, it's, you know, in 5 years' time, we might see the Hawks and Nets up the top of the standings in the East, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you have to do. You got to blow your team up. Go ahead, Corey.
Yeah, you know, and like you said, to the point, like, should they have traded them? Probably. Because if you trade Dwight Howard, you get Miles Plumlee and Marco Bellinelli and the late, you know, in the middle second round draft pick. You easily could have gotten a young prospect and a mid to early first round draft pick for Paul Millsap.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. And he's a hot commodity too at the deadline in the sense that, you know, he's a player that can fit into so many different teams, and he's a guy that could, you know, play that small ball lineup. He could be in one of those death lineups that you could match up with the Warriors or you could match up with the Cavs. So definitely, I think they should have pulled the trigger on that. But it's always tough when you're in a playoff race because obviously they traded him last year, they drop out. Moving on from other departures, we kind of talked about Dwight enough. You know, they lost Dwight. It's obviously going to miss him in the center role, but I think that kind of helps the team. He's kind of moving him on was part of the rebuild. Another guy.
We talked about, wait a minute, can I say one thing? We talked about Dwight Howard more on this podcast than like any of the major like networks. Like ESPN gave him, I think, like 30 seconds. So he got more than enough shine from us.
Yeah, like the trade, when he was traded, like nobody even talked about it. The only thing they talked about was the Twitter part.
Yeah, I was about to say, he was in the middle, like, and that was the more important thing. I'm like, Dwight Howard's like a former All-Star, former like top five player in the NBA, defensive player of the year. Are we like literally discarding him that much already?
It just tells you how much his career's really changed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But moving on from Dwight, we kind of mentioned him a lot in this pod already too. Tim Hardaway Jr., this is a guy who had a pretty good year for them coming off the bench, and he started at points, give him that scoring pop. He signed with the Knicks this year. Are they going to miss Tim Hardaway Jr.? Should they have matched that deal?
They definitely should not have matched that deal. I think that would have been like the easiest decision to make. Like, you know, the Paul Millsap decision would have been, you know, there would have been so much toing and froing. But when you see the Knicks go 4 years, $71 million, it's just like, okay, yeah, see you later. And the fact that the Knicks had him and then, like, they got him back, it's just the NBA is a weird and funny place, and it's part of the reason why I love it. But
I believe it's also the first time the Knicks re-signed their first-round pick in, like, 10 years.
Wow, that's a hell of a stat. Tim Hart, in terms of the loss for the Hawks, yeah, they're losing probably their best offensive player behind Schroeder. So, I mean, who's going to be able to create offense other than him? I can't really pick anyone on that roster. You know, Bazemore might be able to do a few things, but like you guys were saying, he certainly plateaued last season. Can he get back to that form and sort of, you know, fill the void that Tim Hardaway was sort of creating in terms of, you know, especially that shooting? He's a very valuable commodity in today's NBA when you shoot lights out from three.
Yeah, they definitely should not have matched the deal. This was the right move by the Hawks. $16.5 million per year is absolutely absurd for a guy who averages only 14 points per game. You know, in an offseason where we saw contrast kind of come back to earth, this was the one that just stands out, I feel like, compared to others.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But – you know, this obviously hurts. There's no way. You know, obviously, you save. All right. So it's a win in the money aspect, but it's a loss in wins and on court basketball.
Production. Yeah.
Right. So for the future wise, this is probably the right move because if Hardaway Jr. doesn't get better, like say he pulls with Kent Bazemore, he just plateaus at 14 points per game, then this is a god awful deal for everyone for the Knicks. If he gets better, then maybe the Hawks made a mistake. But at this point in time, for a guy who's 25, you know, how much better can you really get? And that's 70, you know, whatever million over 3 or 4 years. You know, this was a good move for the Hawks. It just sucks because, like we just mentioned, Kent Bazemore, Taron Prince, like these guys are going to be asked to do a lot more than they had to last year.
Yeah, and I think like the Hardaway thing with the like, I'm not saying the deal for the Knicks could be completely like it could. There's a possibility where Tim Hardaway Jr. could become a good player and live up to that deal. It's just a huge risk that they're taking. It's kind of like similar to the deals that the Nets have thrown out restricted free agents, but there's not as much promise with Tim Hardaway Jr. You necessarily haven't seen the things that you want to see. And there's also the fact that his defense is somewhat questionable. I think you made a great point, Corey. Like it doesn't make sense in the money standpoint, but in terms of the Hawks talent pool, it hurts them. But you know, it's part of the business. You can't overpay guys, and it's going to come back to bite you in the long run. Especially imagine if they had Kent Bazemore and Tim Hardaway Jr. both the huge deals, and they both suck.
Yeah, you'd be in such a cap hold, and think about what they got for Dwight Howard in that trade. If you wanted to trade a Kent Bazemore or a Tim Hardaway Jr. on those deals with the production of Kent Bazemore last year, they'll get nothing in return.
Just think about the Damari Carroll trade to the Nets. That's all you have to think about. Damari Carroll, pretty much essentially a first and second round pick just for the Nets to take him. So, I mean, that's just telling you where salary is going to be at such a premium, salary cap. especially with all these teams locking up big deals. The cap's really not going to increase as much as people has expected this year. Next year, I think it'll probably go up a little bit more, but there's not going to be many teams that have cap space. So it's a smart move by the Hawks, and it could really pay off in the long run. Another guy they lost, Jose Calderon. You know, he played some backup minutes for them. We know Calderon's not the player he was at this point in his career. He's not very good. He can still shoot the ball. He knows how to play ball, but his lateral quickness and his defense aren't there.
I think the big question is Jose Calderon going to be better for the Cavs than Deron Williams? That's the big question.
Yeah, well, that's a...
I mean, he'll probably hit more than one shot in the game, hopefully.
Shots fired. That's
a fair call. Tough to say that.
I mean, Deron Williams, I mean, what was the stat last year? The Cavs lost every game when Deron Williams didn't have a bucket, and he didn't have a bucket, and like, almost every loss to the Warriors. Yeah. So go figure.
And Richard Jefferson came out and said, like, whenever Deron Williams came on the court, the Warriors players' eyes lit up. And he said that on the podcast. Like, he didn't say that, like, off wax. He said that literally on his road tripping podcast. So that's got to hurt for Deron Williams, I'm sure.
A guy who's also mentioned for a job.
Yeah, and he mentioned that, you know, when talking to Deron Williams, when you talked about MMA or something else, he would get excited. But when you talked about ball, like, he wasn't that pumped about it. So, like, it just kind of tells you a little bit about him and his disinterest. Not to talk about Deron Williams that much, but we're talking about a guy who was a top five point guard at one point, and all of a sudden he fell off to being a bench guy that couldn't even score a basket in the finals.
Yeah, it's been a crazy ride. Like, I still remember the game where when it was the New Jersey Nets and he lit up for like 55 points or whatever and had a ton of threes.
Yeah, against the Hornets, I think it was.
Yeah, you know, and that Deron Williams has been, you know, long gone and dead. And it was crazy that there used to be a debate of Deron Williams versus Chris Paul.
And now he's dead.
It's like one of those like Michael Jackson versus Prince debates. But
yeah, that's a legitimate debate that could, you know, you could argue about. Whereas, you know, Chris Paul was in our top five point guards of all time, whereas Deron Williams would be barely in the top 500.
Yeah, true.
Wow.
I mean, moving on. Sorry.
Oh, but, I'm being way too hyperbolic for my own good. But like, I've been, you know, why not? We're on a podcast. You might as well be hyperbolic.
Throw gas on the fire. It's respectable.
He tried to punch his coach in the face.
That's true. I'm going to segue back now to the Jose Calderon's loss. The only bad thing about losing Jose Calderon is the fact that there's not another point guard yet on this roster.
Oh, they have the rookie for the, well, he's a second-year player this year. Malcolm Delaney, he played a good amount of point guard last year.
Yeah, he'll be playing in a couple minutes, yeah.
But he's not a veteran. He's not really like an experienced guy that you're ready to throw out there for a ton of minutes, so.
All right. I forgot about Delaney. All right.
But they also lost Thabo Sefolosha, Chris Humphreys. Sefolosha, you know, he's been banged up a little bit, but he still gives you a solid wing. You know, he plays good D. He can finish in transition. He's improved his jump shot. Chris Humphreys, you know, not really much at this point of his career.
Where hasn't Chris Humphreys played? Like, just like to be real, like, he's played for the Nets. He's played for the Hawks. He's played Celtics. For the Wizards. He's played for the Celtics. Like,
you want to know how many teams? You want to know how many teams he's been on?
I was going to guess 9, so it would have been close. Are they all East teams?
Actually, you're right. It is 9 teams because technically the New Jersey Nets became the Brooklyn Nets, so it is 9 teams. Yeah.
That makes sense. Are they all East teams? Like, has he been to the West?
He played with the Suns for 1 year and Utah for 2 years and Dallas for 1 year.
Wow. I'm wondering where
on a third of the team in the league. I mean, he almost played on a third of the teams in the NBA.
Maybe the Warriors are getting him on the vet minimum. You know, David West next year will probably retire. So, you know, you can always use Chris Humphreys. He's not that bad, really, is he?
I think it's his basketball IQ and his, like, lack of focus. And sometimes he just does some stupid stuff on the court, I think, is the issue with him. Because I know, like, you know, back when he was on the Nets, he had some good games. But then he just did some things that just made you like, eh.
He married Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, that kind of just hurt
all downhill from there.
Right away. And, you know, I read somewhere, who's going out with Kendall Jenner now? Blake Griffin apparently has been seen with Kendall Jenner the past few times. That does not bode well for Blake. I mean, because D'Angelo Russell was, I think, dating her for a little bit as well. And, you know, he's now in New York, so he's gotten as far away as he can from the West Coast to the East Coast.
We saw what happened to Tristan Thompson. So,
exactly.
Let's go to the starters for the Hawks. Who do you see starting on opening night? Not at the end of the season, because we know that probably could change with some of these young guns, but who's going to open the season for starters for the Hawks?
Well, I'll go to the backcourt. So, I mean, as much as we've been hating on him for a lot of this podcast, I think Schroeder and Bazemore are your likely point guard and shooting guard. I can't see, you know, if Tim Hardaway had been still on the team, I think he probably could have taken Bazemore's spot after a disappointing year. But, you know, for what it is right now and their lack of sort of depth in the backcourt, I think it's those two, and it's not really, there's no argument.
For backcourt for me too, it's definitely going to be Schroeder and Bazemore as well. I don't think you can't put Bazemore on the bench, so he's going to get those minutes and a chance to at least prove himself.
Yeah, I think the backcourt, that's pretty much a lock. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Bazemore lost his spot at some point to somebody like DeAndre Bembry or something like that, but I think he's a lock. But the rest of the starters, I got Torian Prince at small forward, Ersan Ilyasova at power forward, and Dwayne Dedmon at center. I think that's pretty much a lock to be their starting lineup. I don't really envision that changing.
Yeah, unless there's major injuries and unless John Collins does some, you know, ridiculously amazing things where he could take, you know, Ilyasova's spot, and they want to sort of build like a relationship between Schroeder and Collins. But yeah, that's who I had as my starters as well.
Yeah, I think opening night, that's a likely scenario, but I would not be surprised at all by the end of the year, John Collins is starting and some of the young guys are in the lineup, especially if the Hawks want to mess things up, change it around, you know, see what they got on this roster. And like I said, they could maybe move an Ersan Ilyasova or Dwayne Dedmon, so possibilities are definitely there.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're looking at this team, you know, you have to think that one, if not two of these guys, you know, between Ilyasova and Dedmon, like, they could possibly both be traded too. So,
exactly. Who do you guys have as a breakout starter for the Hawks this year?
Breakout starter, I've got Torian Prince. We've been hyping him quite a bit this podcast, and, you know, he had a great rookie year. And I mean, it's natural to see that progression from year one to year two. He's going to have, you know, much more of a role with the departure of Millsap. And I think he's got all the tools to thrive next year under Budenholzer.
For me, I'm going to say Schroeder, which is obviously the safe choice. I wouldn't be surprised if he averaged, you know, right around 21 to 22 points per game. And as many assists as possible with, you know, I'm not sure who else can make a shot in this team yet. Around 7 or 8 assists, which is up from last year. I think he's my go-to, though.
Yeah, I think the argument for Schroeder is certainly one that's there because, you know, in that Wizards series, when we look back, there were some times where he bested John Wall. And John Wall is probably the best point guard in the East right now. So it's definitely a safe bet going with Schroeder.
And I think Schroeder, what really impressed in the playoff series was his pull-up three. If that's something he can consistently hit, he'll be such a deadly player to defend because he is so quick and he gets to the rim at ease. So if they have to respect his three-point shot, that's a big deal. I think
Lillard-like in a way, sort of that pull-up three and that speed. If he can sort of be, you know, the East version of Damian Lillard, then watch out.
Yeah, he just needs to find the consistency. Not saying that I expect that to happen this year, but I see the potential and why the Hawks fans might be excited about that. I'm going to go with Torian Prince, though, too. He's going to move. I mean, I think I could see him struggle a little bit early in the season because it's such a different role, where last year he was, you know, the fourth or fifth option on offense, getting kickouts and, you know, easy plays. Now he's going to have an opportunity to make more plays with the ball. He's going to get the ball in his hands a little bit, and I think that'll allow him to improve. What about bench guys? Who do you think is going to step up for the Hawks this year?
Look, it's really hard to sort of go to the bench, so I'm sort of clutching at straws here. But I think Mike Muscala is, you know, one that we haven't really talked a lot about. But, you know, in today's modern NBA where, you know, Draymond Green's probably a top 10 player, and he's one of those guys that if he gets, you know, the, you know, 25, 28 minutes a night, and he just goes out there and is just asked to just give that energy and that hustle and just do whatever it is on offense, do whatever it is on defense, that I think he can certainly be a presence coming off the bench for the Hawks.
Yeah, John Collins for me.
Easy choice there.
You know, yeah. With the fact that there's, you know, with the big men they have on this roster, you know, Ilyasova, Dedmon, you know, Miles Plumlee, you know, whether or not they re-sign Chris Humphreys was yet to be decided, which, you know, looks unlikely. John Collins is going to get a chance to play a lot of minutes. And if he's somewhat effective, then I think he could either have a very big role off the bench, if not, you know, finally push himself, you know, into the starting lineup at some point.
Yeah, I like Collins too. I think that's a guy who definitely can have a big impact just with the energy level, kind of even what Jack talked about a little bit, energy level being so important in the NBA. I think John Collins could definitely bring that off the bench. DeAndre Bembry was somebody I'd mentioned before. I think that's a guy who had a nice summer league, and we talked about it. The Hawks team just doesn't have a lot of guys that can create and score baskets. This guy can create for himself a little bit, get to the rim, make some shots. He just needs to be more consistent. He didn't get a ton of minutes last year. He picked up some minutes in games where people were injured, and he kind of showcased some nice stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what he does in a bigger role this year.
Yeah, agreed.
Moving on from breakout guys, let's go to our season predictions. Let's go best case scenario for the Hawks this year.
I think best case scenario, they get, you know, 33, 34 wins. I think, you know, look, they've got, I think Schroeder, I think they could, you know, finish as high as 12th, 11th. You know, I don't doubt, you know, the system that Atlanta has in place. You know, they've made the playoffs for the past 10 years, so clearly they're doing something right. Yes, the talent has certainly gone and departed, but I think, you know, 30 or mid, early to mid 30s is the, you know, the ceiling. The ceiling is the roof, as MJ said.
All right. You're a lot higher on them than me. My best case scenario is like 25. That's Schroeder playing his best. That's Bazemore giving you a decent amount. That's Prince showing up, and Collins giving you some nice energy off the bench. You know, maybe 27 if things really go right. End up depth or yeah, right. Gave him two more wins. I don't know if they have enough depth or even enough firepower just to keep up with some of the teams. I mean, the only benefit to the Hawks is they're going to play against. Yeah, they're going to play against Eastern Conference teams for majority of the season. You know, you can scrap up some easy wins against the Magic, the Nets, and the Bulls, who you know we'll talk about later on in this podcast series. But I think 25 for me is best case scenario.
I think I'm going to give you two best case scenarios. One scenario is the Hawks. You know, they trade some of these vets, they pick up some picks, and they have the worst record in the league, and they get the first pick in the draft. Because in theory, that makes a ton of sense for them. They have their pick, you know, getting the number one player and adding some talent would definitely help. In a best case scenario about wins, I would say probably mid to high 20s. Like I'd probably cap out at about 28. The only reason I'd say that is because of Budenholzer as a coach. Like Jack mentioned, the talent isn't there, but the system works. The coaching works. They have done a good job with internal development. They do have some young guys on this team that kind of don't catch much hype, but I think they could have interesting seasons. I mean, I still think the Hawks are probably going to be one of the worst teams in the league, even if it's a best-case scenario, but they could have the improvements that they want to see from their guys.
Yeah, I do want to say, you know, because my worst-case scenario as is actually what you just said, like their best-case scenario would be if they, you know, they obviously fall off and they end up getting, you know, a very high draft pick next year. So in a sense, you know, the worst-case scenario in many ways is actually the best-case scenario.
Yeah, glass half full.
Yeah, true. Very true. But let's talk worst case. What's your worst case, Jack?
In terms of wins, I'm thinking, you know, like the Nets were sort of last season. But I think it makes it's more of an impact in Atlanta being a small market team and, you know, not selling the tickets and just being a completely irrelevant franchise. But if they can get that number one pick, then it makes it all worthwhile. Though, you know, in a lottery based system, it's not guaranteed. And how much worse are they going to be than, you know, the Nets, the Bulls, the Magic? Are they really going to be, you know, as astronomically bad as those teams? Maybe even a Phoenix Suns. So I think, you know, their best case scenario is, you know, like we were saying, their worst case scenario. But I think at the same time, to maintain some relevance in today's NBA, they need to win some games and, you know, try and aim for that 27-28 range.
Yeah, for me, worst case scenario is they get, you know, 12 wins. 11 wins.
Oh, shit.
12 wins. 12 wins.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. God. That's worst case scenario. I don't know. I look at this team. I don't see anything. I see a point guard who doesn't have any shooters around him and some, you know, decent players. I just don't see a lot of wins. I think 12 is the worst case scenario, though. That's not my prediction.
Guys, I gotta go. I can't do the rest of the podcast.
No. That's the worst case for me.
I mean, I really could see a scenario where they do end up in the teens, but I think they probably win more than 12. Like, worst case, they do get the first pick, but Dennis Schroeder doesn't do well. He can't handle the pressure. Ken Bazemore looks terrible. And, you know, the guys don't make the jump they want to see, and they don't. And they look in the, like Jack mentioned, the small market hurts them, and they lose a lot of hype, especially being a 60-win team 2 years ago and now falling off to this level.
Yeah, I mean, I did go a little bit over the top. I don't think I really like the Hawks.
Worst case. So.
You know, that's right. My defense, you said worst case.
So, I mean, anything's possible, ask KG, but. Let's move on to our actual predictions. Hopefully, Corey has him getting a little bit more than double digits. But, Jack, what do you have the Hawks doing this year?
Well, look, I have them being better than those Trust the Process 9-win 76er teams. So I'm going to give them 28 wins. You know, ESPN, I think ESPN's Kevin Pelton came up with his projections based on their RPM. I mean, he had them with 27, which I think is about the range, but I'm going to give them one more than that. I think 28 wins is their likely 28 and 54.
All right. Well, so I'm giving them 19 wins. I mean, okay. But
just got unfollowed by like 17 accounts.
Yeah. Well, let me explain myself, though. If the Nets last year can get 20 wins with that roster and this team lost their – you know, lost Dwight Howard, lost Millsap, and their best player is Schroeder with a bunch of unproven players who haven't done much. I don't think it's crazy to think that they win less than the Nets did last year.
Well, I think you make a point is that they just don't have players that can really have done things in the NBA where you're like, are these guys like really solid above average NBA players? They have a lot of guys that have NBA talent, but they're not at that level yet. So, I mean, I think they're going to have a bad season.
And let's just say this. Say Schroeder gets hurt. This team may not even win.
That's worst case scenario.
Yeah, that's actually – that makes your 12 win scenario more likely. If Schroeder were to get hurt in that instance, they wouldn't have anybody to run the point. They'd probably have to make a trade to just keep the team kind of smooth running or just somebody to run the show or even sign a veteran off, you know, off the market.
Get Nate Robinson on board. Bring that Nate.
Honestly, at that point.
That would sell seats.
It would
absolutely sell seats. I'd fly all the way to Atlanta for that.
Imagine. But my actual prediction for the Hawks is going to be low 20s. You know, probably 20 to 23, 24 wins. You know, I think that they'll probably win some games because of the system. They'll play pretty hard. The East is pretty bad. They should be able to squeeze some out. I would not be surprised if they didn't hit 20, like Corey mentioned, because – I didn't even really think about, like, if Dennis Schroeder gets hurt, which he has gotten hurt in the past because he is a smaller guy and his usage rate is going to be through the roof, that could be a real issue. Even someone like Bazemore or Torian Prince or Ersan Ilyasova or Dwayne Dedman, these are all guys where they don't necessarily have great depth on that bench to really come in and bring another guy in.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be a rough year for attendance in Atlanta.
They already have, like, not trying to hate on them at all. They just have bad attendance as it is already, and they've had struggles even selling playoff seats when they were the 60-win team. So it just kind of sucks for the Hawks and sucks for that organization because they had such great success, and then it just came down so fast.
Yeah, they've got, like, a really great history with Dominique Wilkins, and from what I hear, and they have one of the best, like, team Twitter pages going around as well. Their team Twitter page is fire.
But moving on to something, another social media thing. The truth, and if you guys didn't know, every year this is our third year doing the preview pods, and we come up with an emoji for every team. For me, the emoji for the Hawks is going to be the sad face with a crying tear, just because it's going to be a sad season for the Hawks because they're finally going to lose that the last piece they had of that 60-win team, really, and Paul Millsap, and it's just going to be another rough year for them after having 10 years of success, like Jack said, of making the playoffs.
I want to go somewhat more optimistic than you, Nick. I think, similarly, mine does have a tear on it. It is, as Emojipedia describes it, as the disappointed but relieved face, because they're building something now. There's a direction. You know, they weren't really going anywhere in terms of, you know, competing for a championship, competing for you know, the Eastern Conference Finals. Whereas when you blow it up, you know, you see what's happening with the 76ers now. Everyone's talking them already to being a playoff contender, and Markelle Fultz and Ben Simmons haven't even played a game. So I think that's a bit more optimistic about the Hawks than many people. Just because I'm so low on the Bulls, that's probably why.
All right, so the emoji for me is going to be the emoji
dumpster
like
fire.
It's going to be the one with the bandage around his head, and it's gonna, I think the Hawks are going to get beat up a lot this year, so I'm just expecting them to, you know, be on the side of hurt and losing a lot.
Corey, what's your Twitter at real quick so we can let these Hawks fans know?
I'm glad we didn't get this Hawks guy on that I asked to be on the show. Man, he would have left mid-call.
He would have been like, yeah, Corey, peace.
It's not the first time that Hawks Twitter has hated me, so.
I mean, it's not like it's completely out of the picture, and it's not like, I think, you know, it's kind of funny because I'm think the Hawks are going to do so bad because they lost so many guys and the lack of options on their roster. And then I just think the fact of losing Paul Millsap is so big that that's just like a huge loss. And Hawks fans are kind of accept that because they've been hyping up Paul Millsap so much the last 2 years. And I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it, but you have to realize that you guys said he does all this stuff and you have no one to replace him. Obviously, it's going to hurt your team a lot.
Tremendous.
I agree. For sure that the loss, you know, it's you know they may never find but the odds of finding a guy like Paul Millsap in the foreseeable future, you know, it's you don't get a Millsap all the time. Like, those players are rare. There's a reason why there's only so many all-stars in the league.
Exactly. And somebody who just fits so well and somebody who does so many things so well. But moving on to the league pass rating, where do you guys rate the Hawks this year, 1 through 10 on league pass? I'm just waiting to hear Corey.
Can we do negatives here? Because I think Corey's going to do like -7 or something.
I really was thinking that.
Look, I'm not going to be going too great either. I'm going to 2, maybe a 2.5. There's not much reason to sort of tune in unless, you know, I can't actually think of a reason why I would go out of my way to watch a Hawks game, really. Unless, like, they might be doing, like, a Tinder night and, like, you know, there's some stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
In the crowd. That's always fun to check out. But, yeah, I'm not going to be watching many Hawks games. I'll just say that.
All right. So I'm thinking between 0 and 1. right in between that area. That's where I'm going. Probably 1.
I was about to say, like, where's the decimal point? Is it like above a half, above 0.5?
Oh, yeah. It's like 0.7 because, you know, they're going to play the Pacers, so I'm going to have to watch that. And they're probably going to play a couple other teams they're going to end up having to watch. So, you know, right around 1.
I guess I'll give them a 2. But remember, as I mentioned on the previous show, I have a skewed scale. The Warriors are a 10 and nobody is a 9 because they're so much better than everybody else. So everybody gets pushed down one extra notch. So I got the Hawks at 2 out of 10.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I like this scale you got, this new scale.
I think it's due because the Warriors are just, you know, I'm going to get crazy and say they're just like the best team that ever existed in the NBA. And we're going to realize that in a, you know, like 20 years from now and be like, wow, they had Kevin Durant and Steph Curry on the same team. Like, when does that happen?
And their third
2K?
Option was Klay Thompson.
Yeah. And they have this guy, Draymond Green.
Who was like the best defensive player of his generation almost always.
Oh, yeah. And then Andre Iguodala. Don't worry about him either. Like, but we'll save the Warriors. Maybe we'll give them like a 3-hour preview because they deserve it. But
yeah, there'll be like 9 OTG writers probably wanting to get on that one.
Literally, like the whole staff. It's like we go through every person. That's my 2 cents on the Warriors. But let's finish this one up real quick. The Hawks aren't that bad. We can at least give them our attention. What show would you – all right, I got to question this right. You would watch the Hawks over what show? And it has to be like a show that you kind of relatively like.
So, like, I don't mind a bit of trashy reality TV. So I'm going to go, like, maybe, like, you know, Real Housewives of Atlanta or, like, Keeping Up with the Kardashians. I feel like that's kind of relevant with the Humphries factor, the Atlanta factor. But, like, you know, if we're talking, like, cooking reality shows, there's no way I'm, like, giving up Chopped or Top Chef for these guys.
I just like how you said Real Housewives of Atlanta. Like, yeah, you had to pick Atlanta.
Has to be Atlanta. Can't be New York. Can't be. There's like there's one in Sydney, I think, actually. Like, there's an Australian one. But, you know, I'd probably rather watch that one than the Hawks, to be fair.
Corey, what about
man,
you?
This is tough. I gotta find a show that like I like but I don't like at the same time. All right, so I'm okay. I don't like Jersey Shore, but like if it's on TV, I'll watch it. But like if I had a pick between Jersey Shore or Atlanta Hawks, I'd watch the Hawks because I like basketball more. So there you go.
I'm gonna throw shade at a popular show real quick. I'd rather watch the Hawks over Shameless.
Ooh. Oh, come on.
Ouch.
You don't like trash?
Attack me. I hate that show. I deal with enough bad problems in real life that I don't need to watch that happen to people for 60 minutes. Like,
I mean, honestly, that show is like a show about, I mean, not dirtbags, but like the pretty much. It says a bunch
pretty
of nonsense.
Pretty much Frank the Drunk. Like,
yeah, drugs and sex and everything else. Yeah, okay.
So it sounds like Jersey Shore anyway.
It's a good pick. It's good for our younger audience. Don't watch Shameless. Watch the Atlanta Hawks.
They might play bad basketball, but they run a good system. But
that'll be their tagline for the upcoming season.
Yeah. We don't have talent, but we play ball the right way.
Nothing Shameless about us.
That wraps it up for today. Jack, happy to have you on for your first show with OTG. Corey, as always, great to have you on. As always, thanks everybody for listening and hit that subscribe button.